everyone, and welcome to the Dr. Linda Mintel Show. I'm your host, Dr. Linda Mintel, the relationship doctor, and I'm here along with my co-host, Chris Weigel. And every weekend, we're here, we're doing life together, and we're glad you joined us.
That's right, Dr. Linda. Yet another weekend has rolled around here on the Faith Radio Network. Today, we are tackling a tough subject on this show. There's been a lot in the news about solutions to prevent the school shootings that we feel we need to recap all the ideas and talk about which of these ideas are useful and backed up with some actual data.
So like you were probably leaving work. I was leaving work on Valentine's Day, and I was horrified and, of course, saddened to turn on my car radio and hear about, again, another one of these school massacres. That day, of course, we all learned that 17 people were killed at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School, and our hearts still go out to the parents and the families involved in that. Continue to pray for you. But no parent, Chris, should ever have to face what those parents had to deal with on that day. So preventing school violence is now becoming one of America's most pressing concerns. And we don't want to forget what happened and move on without trying to come up with some real solutions this time around.
Right. This has been around for a while. Your first book, Kids Killing Kids, was written after the Columbine shooting. And here we are, believe it or not, 19 years later. It's time to stop and come up with some solutions that will work.
I know. There's not going to probably be one solution. We hear a lot of one-note ideas in the news.
Right.
It's not going to solve it because this issue is very complex. It's going to take making changes on a number of levels to stop this senseless killing. And we're going to have to implement multiple, I think, prevention strategies. But when we look at this and then we look at the research, and I did look at the research, I always do that to see what do we learn from these horrible events? What are the threat assessments that people are coming up with so that we can study this problem and we can recommend some strategies for moving forward?
We do want to say that schools are still very safe places, but even one death from violence at a school is way too many. So we're going to talk about what can be done and address the myth that nothing can be done to stop this. You do hear that a lot where people say, well, this can't be stopped. We have to live with it.
Accept it as the new normal is what I've heard some people say. But as Governor Huckabee noted, nothing was the problem. There were safety measures already in place. If they had been followed, we don't know if this would have even happened. You know, we have to look at the precautions that are already in place and look at the gaps and the holes when people aren't following through on the things that could have been done and investigate why those things didn't happen. But certainly, we have to enforce the laws that we have now.
Right.
That's not a solution for going forward, but it is a solution in this case.
Let's focus on a number of good ideas that are being considered as real solutions to this problem. What about just making changes to the physical environments of schools? A place to begin is to make school buildings safer.
Well, research suggests that the physical environment can influence fear and safety. Physical features of the school environment that could reduce violence include things like natural surveillance. So I've heard suggestions such as having windows at the entrances and low or no shrubbery at all so that you don't block the visibility so people can actually see who's coming into the building.
Yeah.
Managing the access points. We've heard a lot about this in the news. I heard one of the parents say that in a Washington school, there was one way in and one way out, and that was it. And those exits were continuously monitored. I think that's a good idea.
Are you a fan of metal detectors at a school?
Actually, I am. What about you?
It seems strange, but it may be necessary.
Well, actually, the National School Safety and Security Services website says about this about metal detectors. They've been implemented less often due to the cost, so they're expensive.
Right.
And the research on their effectiveness is not real extensive yet, but some studies do show a beneficial effect. So I think it's worth a try. Some of the schools and inner cities already use this. And while it isn't what we're used to seeing, maybe it's part of what we need to do.
If you're on social media, you can't get away from the fact that everyone has an opinion. And we are split on the issue of arming teachers. What do you think about that?
You know, I really can see both sides to this debate. Mm-hmm. People worry about teachers who would become emotional waving a gun. I wouldn't want to be a teacher with a gun. I wouldn't trust myself. And even if I had a lot of training, I just not something I want to do. So I understand. And a lot of teachers are saying, hey, I signed up to teach. I didn't sign up to be a police officer. But I do think somebody in the building could be trained to use a gun. I'm not really for schools being gun-free zones. I know this is just our opinions. We're just giving you our opinions, and we don't have call-ins. Otherwise, we'd probably get a lot of call-ins on this. But I think that whether it's teachers or outside security or a small elite group of people with some military training, that this could be a deterrent. Chris, in our building, in my hallway, we have three people who are ex-military, and they carry. I think the shooters and the people who are committing violence, it's very cowardly, in my opinion, to prey on children and teens who just can't defend themselves. Right. And if those people who want to commit violence knew that they would be taken down quickly, that might be a deterrent.
And then there's the never-ending debate about guns. And we've heard all the statements, guns don't kill people, people kill people. But this topic seems to dominate the news.
I don't understand the automatic weapon thing. So I'm okay with taking away certain weapons,
right,
not taking away the people's right to be armed. But I think I am very supportive of raising the age of when somebody can buy a weapon. You know, Chris, if the brain doesn't really form fully until the age of 25, maybe we should wait until someone's 25 before they can buy a weapon and use it responsibly. But here's the thing. Even if you ban those weapons, 68% of school shootings, the shooter gets a gun from a parent or a close relative's house. They're not going to keep the law, even if the law says you can't own a gun. They're going to find a way to get it. And we've seen what's happened. People are driving cars into people now, so they're going to find a way.
You looked up what Israel does, since school shootings are rare in that country. And one thing you discovered is that most people don't have access to the kinds of arsenal that's readily available in the United States.
So Israel's Department of Public Security considers gun ownership a privilege, not a right. Now, that's different.
Right.
That's very different than what we say, because we have a constitution that says it's a right. But here's what they do. This is very interesting to me. According to the Jewish Telegraphic Agency, with few exceptions, gun owners in Israel are limited to one pistol. They can own one pistol, and they must undergo extensive mental and physical tests before they can receive a weapon. Those who have not served in the military or in a government volunteer agency must wait until the age of 27 to apply for a firearms license. Gun owners are limited to 50 rounds of ammunition per year.
Wow.
West Bank settlers can obtain permits to carry guns for security purposes, but because gun ownership in Israel is considered a privilege, not a right, policymakers are able to adapt gun laws to public health and other public concerns. And they train people to find the person with intent. So they focus on the person with intent rather than the weapons.
The difference is here we have a right to own guns based on the Second Amendment.
I know. There's something to be said about considering parts of that solution, even if it's raising the age that one can purchase a gun. I just think we should look at what some other people are doing.
Most of us would agree that reforms are needed in this area.
And just an interesting additional fact on that, and then I'll stop talking about Israel. But in Israel, to curb suicide rates among adolescent soldiers, in 2010, the military changed its policy and limited conditions under which soldiers could take their guns home when on leave.
Wow.
Following the policy change, and this is what we need to look at is the data, suicide rates decreased by 40% from that one change. It's kind of significant. So here's a group of people who had access to guns for suicide, and just that change that they make dropped the rate significantly. So maybe we need to try some new things and then follow the data.
I would agree that we could explore some changes for sure. And since the gun debate will go on, and maybe it should, let's talk about something that could be changed, how the media handles the story of a shooter. Stay with us as we talk about much more that can be done to make schools safer after the break. Dr. Linda, one of our listeners asks this question. Sometimes I'm so overcome with worry and anxiety that I think I'm losing my mind. Seems I've tried everything from drugs to meditation. Why doesn't anything work?
Well, I'm so sorry that your life seems so unmanageable and overwhelming. Too often, though, it does seem nearly impossible to live in peace and contentment because of all the craziness in our world. Did you know that God's plan for handling worry is so simple and yet so perfect that you can begin using it today? Did you know that starting right now, you can begin to cultivate a worry-free life? These aren't pie-in-the-sky promises. They're God's prescription for you to thrive and to soar past your anxiety and worries. Try this. The next time you begin to feel overwhelmed by life's pressures and worry clouds your mind with negative thoughts and depression, say what King David prayed. The Lord is my strength and my shield. Remind yourself that my heart trusts in Him and I am helped. I have so much more good news for you. I hope you'll find it in my book, Letting Go of Worry.
Thanks, Dr. Linda. Now that's great advice. You can find God's plan for your peace and contentment in Dr. Linda's book, Letting Go of Worry. It's available wherever you buy your books online. Welcome back to the Dr. Linda Mental Show, and before we get back into our discussion about how to make schools safer, I want to remind you that Dr. Linda blogs weekly, has a free monthly e-newsletter, and keeps you aware of all things about relationships on her website, drlindamental.com. You can follow her on social media as well, Twitter, at Dr. Linda Helps, and more. Okay, Dr. Linda, let's talk about how the media handles the stories of school shootings. Do you feel there is too much attention given to the shooters?
I do. I think our fascination with the shooters is just not helpful, and it actually could be harmful because it glorifies the shootings. It brings infamy to a person's name and their life. It would be better, I think, if nobody could ever recall the names of the shooters or remember who they are.
Right.
Maybe that sounds a little mean, but I just think there's too much fame that's tied up for some of these kids. And if news media could stop focusing on the sensational for ratings and think about how they could aid the public good, stop allowing these people to get notoriety, that could be a good thing.
Right.
Desperate minds, Chris, yearn for recognition. And these are people who lack purpose for their lives and have given themselves over to using violence as the only way to get respect and be noticed.
And then there is the danger of what they call copycat crimes, which they sometimes follow when they see this stuff on TV.
Yeah, they want to do the same thing. So journalists and producers should focus less on the perpetrator, his deviant motives, and the moment-by-moment unfolding of the deed.
Right.
And boy, that is people's cell phones and every little detail. And I think they should focus more on the consequences of the crime and stop giving him his day of glory.
I know you've talked about the impact of violent entertainment on vulnerable people. Say more about that.
Well, being steeped in a culture of video violence doesn't seem to get much attention in the aftermath of these violent episodes that we see. Yet, Chris, what's different from years ago? When we start to think about media, here's a big difference. There's an explosion over the years of violent video games, and we expect them not to influence people in a negative way. Games and movies that promote shooting and killing desensitize people to hurting other people. And yet nobody talks about that. And in fact, Chris, when I've gone on other radio shows and I've talked about this, I get hate mail from gamers because they don't want to deal with this fact. We become a culture of entertainment violence. This is different from years ago when, you know, we didn't have all this. We have video games, we have comic books, we have television, we have movies. They all glorify violence. And my question is, what is the point? Is that really entertaining? Does that really edify a person's life and lead them to be a good citizen? Maybe media should cooperate and stop glorifying guns in acts of killing. And in fact, why doesn't Hollywood enact their own self-imposed ban on using weapons in any films or television productions?
Right.
That would reduce violence. Why don't they do this?
It's odd because they call for gun control.
Yeah, and they don't do it.
Right.
On their own entertainment industry. So often the violent video games, the internet sites, the movies that glorify guns, they target the police. This just feeds the mind of people who are unstable and prone to an outlet for their frustrations. I read a case the other day where a person, Chris, was homicidal. And what he did is he spent every evening immersing himself in violent video games to feed his angry impulses. And he was being looked at by a hospital, but they couldn't put him in the hospital because he hadn't done anything. Yet we know that violence begets violence. It desensitizes you to hurting others, as I said. It takes away empathy, and it makes a person more aggressive. Will everybody who plays a violent video game shoot someone? No. We know that, but the vulnerable people may be prone to action and are feeding their minds with violence and aggression that could be acted out. So honestly, I just don't see the point of it. I don't see it as entertaining. I think so much of that violence looks real, and it helps people learn how to shoot just like they teach you in simulation with learning how to be a pilot or any other kind of career like that. And I'll tell you, I didn't want my son feeding on this.
I think you hit on something there, because as the technology's gotten better and these games look more and more and more realistic.
Real, yeah.
It was back in the early 80s, a video game looked like a video
Pac-Man.
Game. Right. Yeah. Exactly. But today it almost looks like a live movie that you're playing, and that realism can have an effect on someone's sense of reality.
It does.
Related to this is often violent and disturbing images posted on social media.
So what students write on social media that is disturbing or violent things that they write or post should not be ignored. And I think that was one of the biggest lessons we learned from this last event. Hmm. The previous shooter posted with his name. He had his name on things.
Yeah.
And there were over, I heard originally 30-some visits. The last I heard, there were 45 visits to this person's home and nothing was done.
It's amazing. I heard a prayer request today for a 15-year-old girl who is struggling seriously with what we call cyberbullying. Mm. It's a real problem. We talk about it frequently because it doesn't go away, and it continues to shame and feed insecurity and maybe even revenge in some cases. And bullying has always been around, but cyberbullying is, you would say it's a different animal.
And we've talked about this on other shows, but in the digital age, a bully has the ability to torture and humiliate someone, not only in their presence. They can do it constantly through social media, and it's there for everybody to see. So once something is on the internet, it isn't removed, and it's far easier for the perpetrator to commit that kind of cyberbullying and harder for the victim to escape it. Some kids become what is called injustice collectors. It was kind of a new term to me, and what an injustice collector is, they believe they have been harmed by a number of people and events in their life, and now they want to get back at people and society, whether it's real or imagined, and acting out in a school for them is an act of revenge. So they've collected all these injustices that they feel, and then they're going to act it out.
Right.
So in a number of cases, bullying does play a role when we look at these shooting events in schools, but it wasn't a factor in every case. And clearly not every child who is bullied in school will pose a risk. However, in a number of the cases, the attackers described experiences of being bullied in terms of being approached and tormented, and they felt that this was a problem. So in 61 cases, they were motivated for the desire for revenge.
Wow. The cyber part of this seems hard to stop, so I'm not really sure we can that can be our focus.
We have to do something. So I think what we have to do, since we can't always stop that from happening, is focus on how to help kids with coping skills and resiliency, how to deal with that kind of bullying when they see it, and develop some critical coping skills so that when they do see that, they're not going to be overwhelmed by it, and they're not going to just kind of shrivel up and go into themselves. And one of the issues here, Chris, has to do with you have to have kids with strong attachments in their rest of their life. They have to build and maintain relationships with people that are doing the right thing and are doing socially acceptable things. And that's one of the ways, is to establish that caring connection with a youth, someone he feels he's connected to and cares about him, that can disrupt those really awful ideas that they have in their head.
What do you think about the difference between this pattern of making kids accountable for their actions and blaming the teachers?
I think that's one of the problems, one of the changes in schools, is that it used to be when I would get called by the teacher, I never thought about, I wonder what the teacher did wrong. I wonder if my mom and dad are going to call up the school and get on my side. I was terrified, and that shift has changed, and we've got to get back to making kids personally responsible for their behavior.
And there's a pattern in our society today where kids are less involved in their community and not encouraged to speak up.
Again, we heard a lot of kids talk about that see it, say it kind of idea, and they do have to start looking more intently at what other people are doing and what they're saying, and talk to people about it and be connected in community to prevent some of this.
And speaking of speaking up, here's a quote from people who specialize in school security. It says, "We learn more about weapons in schools from kids who come forward and tell an adult that they trust. Incidents of targeted violence at schools are rarely impulsive." We keep listening to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. On today's program, we're talking about how to keep schools safer. More right after this.
Did you know you have a conflict style? Everybody does. Are you a conflict avoider? Maybe you don't avoid, but instead react intensely. Or perhaps you are a great negotiator. Dr. Linda Mento offers a free conflict quiz when you visit her website, www.drlindahelps.com. Click on the picture of her latest book, We Need to Talk. Then have a friend or your partner take the quiz too, and see if you can navigate conflict successfully.
To take the conflict style quiz, click on the cover of Dr. Linda's latest book at drlindahelps.com.
Welcome back to the Dr. Linda Mental Show, and I'd like to remind you that you can find Dr. Linda online at drlindamental.com, and you can follow her on social media as well, Twitter at Dr. Linda Helps and more. And Dr. Linda, we're dealing with a pretty serious topic today, the violence in schools that we've been seeing in the news. And let's deal with a significant problem related to this, and that would be mental health.
So we've heard it over and over on the news that mental illness does not make a person necessarily dangerous. People have mental illness and they never would commit a crime. And sometimes in these people who do commit these crimes, there is actually no history of mental illness. But it can certainly compound instability. So when there is a mental health history, it needs to be addressed. We saw not addressing it. We saw how terrible that was this last time around. For some people, it can lead to thinking that violence is the only option to lash out at the world, or the only way that they can show others how they feel, or to show them how much pain they're feeling by creating that kind of pain on everyone else. But again, I want to highlight the fact that not everyone with mental illness does this kind of thing or would even think to do this kind of thing.
You say there is no accurate or useful profile of the school shooter, and our focus needs to be on threat assessment.
It's frustrating, isn't it, that they've looked at all this data and they can't come up with an actual profile. So they've had situations in looking at the shooters where they've been from intact families to foster homes.
Wow.
Academic performance ranged from excellent to failing. Few of the shooters had been diagnosed with any mental disorders prior to the incident, and less than one-third had histories of drug or alcohol abuse. So they're trying to find a profile, Chris, and it's not working that well to find one way of looking at someone to predict that they're going to do that.
And the Secret Service has, in fact, been unable to profile the typical school shooter. PAC's Real Solutions to Gun Violence has issued a list of warning signs that help to make a risk assessment. Let's go over those.
I think these are helpful. So they look for things that put a person at risk. So here's the list. A cry for help in which the person issues a threat.
In this case, did happen.
Yeah, and it's happened many other times. They express violent fantasies. They post violent videos or warnings online. We see that as a constant theme.
Right.
Unusual interest in violence, fascination with death, weapons, or violent behavior, rage, externalization of blame, so the idea that everyone is against me, withdrawing from friends or activities or taking more risks, and a student who's really interested in getting guns, collects movies and posters about shootings, regularly visits fan websites for school shooters, and the person who's a social loner is likely to be in dire need of some kind of professional help. And then again, we look at symptoms of depression, but more of a disillusioned youth who can't seem to find his place. So those are some of the things you can look for that might say to you that person might need some help.
And generally after the fact, after an incident like this, the students come forward and say,
he was a weird kid.
Right, we can see why he did that.
Or
right.
He said things, or, you know, we noticed some weird behaviors.
So we need threat assessment teams in schools, people who are trained and know the early signs of trouble, and get those who have mental health problems some help. And that means a lot of mental health reform.
It really does. The mental health system is very broken, in my opinion. There's a shortage of psychiatric hospital beds. People are not kept in hospitals long enough to treat them. A lot of times they're just medicated, and there's not really any real therapy or counseling that gets at the root problems of what's going on with someone. And then they're released back to their environment with really no solution to their problems.
Well, even all of this won't affect change if a heart isn't transformed.
That's the biggest change that we have seen from years past, is that we've become more morally bankrupt. And many kids have lost faith in adults who can't even talk about their differences in a civil manner. I mean, look at us in politics.
Right.
People can't even have civil conversations. And with the lack of real community in people's lives that have been replaced by social media platforms, these troubled people are left a lot of times to their own devices.
When you tell a kid that he evolved from primordial ooze and he's one of the animals on the planet, and then on top of that, take the Ten Commandments out of schools, what is he left with?
There's a huge inaccurate understanding of the interpretation of separation of church and state, and we've gotten into so much trouble because of this. In effect, what you're talking about is we've taken God out of the public square, and we've relegated him to church buildings, yeah. And it's a terrible social experiment that has not worked. Why was it years ago, Chris, that people came to high schools with rifles in the pickup trucks? I mean, we never thought about hurting people and doing the things that people are doing today.
You know, Dr. Linda, it's true. Many rural communities had guns and trucks and cars as just part of hunting life.
Right.
We never dreamed of taking those guns and using them to kill fellow students.
So you have to ask, what is fundamentally wrong and different from years ago? Is the fact that there are no daily religious activities in school, is that part of the difference we're seeing? Mm. Governor Mike Huckabee said this after the Sandy Hook school shooting. When we ask why there is violence in our schools, but we've systematically removed God from our schools, should we be so surprised that schools have become a place for carnage because we've made it a place where we don't want to talk about eternity, life, responsibility, accountability, that we're just not going to have to be accountable to the police if they catch us? Mm. But one day we'll stand in judgment before God. If we don't believe that, we don't fear that. That's pretty strong.
Prayer has been taken out of schools.
You know, people don't want to talk about the problem of sin.
Mm.
And when a dark heart gets gripped by evil, what happens to that person? They reject the existence of God. There's no accountability to a supreme being. We've eroded Judeo-Christian values. We've eroded the value of human life from the womb to the tomb.
Right.
Whether it's abortion or physician-assisted suicide. There's brokenness in homes with parents and children. There are absent fathers. And we believe that fathers aren't even all that important in parenting. Fathers are usually supposed to be the leaders, the spiritual leaders of a home. There's been a decline in church attendance. There's so many things that have changed in the spiritual realm, Chris. And that is part of the problem that we need to really get a grip with. We need to pray for revival in our country, that people get changed through a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. So the bottom line is we need Jesus and his influence on the hearts of those who are so bent on evil and doing harm. Yes, there are many other things we can do to limit violence and make schools safer, but a transformed heart will make all the difference. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Many thanks to our producer and social media director, Norm Mintel, our engineer, and my co-host, Chris Weigel, who makes this show a conversation. From all of us here at Faith Radio, we'll talk to you next weekend. In the meantime, remember, we're here, we're doing life together, and it's better when you don't have to do it alone.
Doing life together.
Well, thanks for listening to this conversation from the Dr. Linda Mintel Show. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and helping us grow the impact of the Dr. Linda Mintel Show. Also, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player, and you'll never miss a show.